All right, welcome to the Rewire podcast. I'm super excited about this one because not too often do I have an opportunity to talk with somebody who shares one passion for mindfulness as a way of being and as a teacher, but also somebody who is a mindful parent and incorporates that into your family with your daughter as well. Tanya is a two-time children's book author, a meditation and mindfulness guide, who has a passion for creating moments of connection with families. And you call it sweet pockets of peace. And those are absolutely precious. So Tanya, thank you so much for taking some time.
Grateful to be here. So grateful to have connected with you. To be on that same path of the mindfulness journey for ourselves and for our children. And it definitely feels like a true blessing to just be able to dive into this conversation with you. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for giving me this opportunity.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so I wanted to jump right in to this because interestingly, and we were just chatting before we started recording about the mindfulness journey and people who don't dabble in it, but really live that lifestyle. And that's not something typically that we were taught by our parents. Most people, I don't think I've met anybody actually, maybe a couple people who are probably almost enlightened by the time they're my age, whose parents actually lived that lifestyle, taught them how to meditate, you know, and all the things. Mindfulness for me was, you know, overcoming something catastrophic and really a reset and a way of being to be more present and eventually over time heal and continue to heal and create more peace. So I'm really curious, Tanya, you know, your journey into mindfulness and how this has become such a big, important part of your life, not only with you and your family, but as a teacher as well.
Yeah. My mom was not sitting down and meditating with me, for sure. She was working a lot. So we didn't have the actual structure or rituals around a mindfulness practice. But just a little bit of a backstory to understand why I maybe felt so called to it. And it definitely felt natural for me. But, you know, like many others, I witnessed a very stormy marriage between my parents. And so she became a single mother when I was six. And it was a really rocky divorce as well. And so she was just always working, my mom. And then when I was 12, one of the, they call it a big T, so a big trauma, I guess, occurred in my life where my father was, you know, tragically killed by the hands of another. And so it was very quick, you know, one day he's there and then next day he's not. And so that, I think, then my mother felt called to dive more deeper into just introducing me to things. So that's when she introduced me to Dr. Wayne Dyer. I think I told you that before. So, you know, she would buy me his intention cards, his affirmation cards, and just kind of introducing me in that realm, but not so much her sitting down herself with me to do it. And I've always been super spiritually connected, if you want to call it. But my journey definitely started so right before I was a teenager, after my father's death. I think I got really into it. But I didn't really dive in to a super dedicated practice, I would say, until I became a mother. So I had some tools here and there, and I was very interested in, you know, the spiritual path and the mindfulness path. But when I became pregnant, I definitely kind of made a commitment to be a cycle breaker, essentially, and that I wasn't going to let her, I guess, experience the same things I did. Not that she would experience the same unfolding and the same story, but I had this deep inner knowing that this is the way. You have to plant these seeds from the beginning. So day one, I started to plant them, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Tanya. I know there's a lot more there, and potentially next time we'll dig into it a bit more from your perspective. But I find it fascinating and also very parallel to my story with your true dedication to it when you became a mom. you know, and it was fatherhood for me that took me from a dabbler to somebody who went all in, because that was my why. And as well, wanting to be a cycle breaker. And, you know, I hear that all the time now, you know, everybody's like, you know, heal yourself and then you don't have to, your kids won't have to do this, you know? So, you know, healing is like, it's not like an end game, right? It's an ongoing thing, but yeah, we're certainly changing the cycle anyway for the better. So yeah, so I think that's a great way to kind of segue into the children's side of things now. So, you know, you've got your little one and, you know, you're teaching mindfulness, and it's really beautiful and inspiring when I see your posts, you know, of your daughter and her teaching others and, you know, her sharing her wisdom and just so authentically, and her energy is just so, you know, it's a beautiful place. And I know parents listening to this, I mean, I think we're in a place of unprecedented distractions and noise, not just for the kids, but for all of us. Like, it's just across the board, but they're growing up in that place. I mean, when I grew up, I was like spending so much time in nature. I had three channels. It was like, there wasn't many options, you know, but now it's crazy. So I think it's important for families to create time for those pockets of peace and those things. So I think, you know, if you're a parent, if you're talking to a parent and you're to give them sort of some first step advice on how to create a mindfulness practice within the family, is there something that you would typically recommend?
Yeah. So first, I think a huge thing is releasing expectations, right? So we have these expectations of, oh, I'm going to set up this little Zen den and I'm going to create the most peaceful place for us to sink into a pocket of peace. I think when, you know, being super attached to an outcome is going to put pressure on you, and it's definitely going to put pressure on them. And then you're going to disrupt the actual point of connection. So releasing just expectations and going more into it with the intention. So you're right. We are living in probably one of the most distracted times ever, right? Our kids are probably the first generation that are growing up that haven't grown up without a screen. So they're actually being exposed just to more things than we ever were. The news, all these things can, if they have certain apps or they have access to a YouTube, things are being thrown at them that they're not meant to carry, that their little selves can't really even digest. So that whole part, definitely the whole distraction and just coming back to ourselves and creating pockets of peace is so important. But when it comes to the parent-child connection and you want to create that, I would say release expectation and do it just from a place of love and intention. You don't need 10, 15 minutes with little ones. You just need really, it's quality over quantity. And I don't know, like for myself, my daughter is not home with me every day anymore because, you know, we had the breakdown of our family and the marriage. So I savor those moments of connection even more so, but I'm not putting pressure on myself or her for them to be a certain amount of time. It's just really taking those moments to breathe, to practice some affirmations. And it's so nourishing for them and for us. And if you feel resistance or you feel resistance from them, it's once you actually do those sweet pockets of peace and you start engaging in these rituals, and it feeds your soul like on a whole nother level. Cause like you said, we're always go, go, go. We have to do this. We have to get them to school, to another practice, or they're not with you every day. You know, it makes it, just, I don't know. Like I say, like, it's like medicine for the soul, but you're planting a seed. You might not even see the fruit of it. So you might think you're meditating with them or you're doing these affirmations, you're not always going to see the fruit, you know, the day you plant the seed. But my, I think, biggest thing is just to believe in the power of planting seeds. And I've seen it already with Gemma, huge, right? Like sometimes when she leads me through some affirmations, I'm just like taken back by the things that come through her, which is really beautiful. But, you know, you're not going to see them sometimes for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that is beautiful. And I just want to remind anybody listening right now, this advice for children is for parents. It's so funny, whenever I talk to kids or talk about kids, parents are usually picking up just as much as the kids. This is universal for everybody, you know, to adopt. I love what you said about the expectation piece. And I feel that, you know, we have such an outcome-based, goal-based society where everybody's trying to move up that notch or achieve or be or become something, where in mindfulness, you really are becoming nothing. You're just being. And that's a really difficult concept for people just to surrender into the moment. And, you know, and anyone else who may be listening, who may be new to this topic, I mean, mindfulness really just means to be in the present moment, aware of what's happening around us, aware of what's happening in the body, but also with a sort of overlay of kindness and compassion and love for ourselves, and just really accepting what is pleasant and unpleasant equally, which is also very difficult. Whereas meditation is really the practice that helps us become more mindful. It's that practice of sitting there every day and becoming familiar with our own patterns and noticing those things. Because, you know, what you said about outcomes, almost every adult who's a hard driving A type that I work with, you know, they're like, I'm not getting anywhere. Well, you know, I always bring it back to something they'll understand. Like, well, you go to the gym for 2 weeks, take a look in the mirror, you know, what's going to change. It's, as you said, you plant those seeds, and over time, you know, you have to be very, very patient. But they start to bloom.
Even for ourselves, like, we have this idea that we're going to sit down and we're going to meditate and all of our thoughts are going to disappear. And then we're just going to feel so clear and amazing and have clarity on everything. And sometimes you sit down and stuff comes up, you know, so you don't really know. I always say, like, I never know what any meditation is going to bring up. You know, with the kids, it's different. So you're focusing on maybe taking them on a sweet journey, you know, or just focusing on connecting to their breath or practicing some positive affirmations, which all is amazing. And it's, none of it is a trend. It's a tool that's going to serve them long after they leave our nest. And, you know, when they become teenagers and we're not there, this is what the planting of the seed really is for, so that when they are with their friends or they come up with some anxious situation that they're navigating, they're going to remember, like, okay, I don't have this. And I don't have my essential oils, or I don't have this. I always say everybody thinks they need all these things, but you have your breath, right? And you take it with you everywhere you go. So if you can learn to just pause and connect and breathe, then you're going to have everything you need. So that's really the planting of the seed. But I was going to say something. Yes, what comes up? So we never know what's going to come up, right? Sometimes it's very uncomfortable. You're going to have a million thoughts going through your head during this meditation. And so it's just about becoming the observer, right? Not judging, coming at yourself from a non-judgmental space and becoming the observer and being like, okay, I'm going to breathe through this. What needs to move through me? What can I release now to create space for the new? Because so often we're holding on to things we just don't even realize anymore, right? So, yeah, not every meditation is rainbow and unicorns, right?
Yes, that's it, right? And some are ugly and painful and agitating and or even just dull and boring. You know, it's all these things that we try to typically reach for something, a snack, or grab the phone and start a doom scroll, or the TV remote, or anything to distract us from what's coming up. Because, you know, to your point, we all have stuff that we've packed down and we've suppressed, or that it's been repressed within us from childhood that's down there, and everything wants to float to the surface. We just keep pushing it back down, and then we wonder why we're, you know, we end up so unhappy and so triggered by so many things. I love what you said about just bringing online that observer. And, you know, I love the Ram Dass quote about, you know, the observer being, it's like standing on the bridge, observing the river, and the river is all of those things that are flowing, the thoughts, 60,000 thoughts, and all of the emotions that are swirling around, and things in our environment and all the people around us. But if we're able to sit back and stop to just observe these things, we can just notice those from that higher perspective. Because most of the time we get pulled right into the river, and then we're in that cage, and you know, that's where we get trapped. And you know, for a lot of people, they get you know, it can get to a dark place very
quickly.
And
our triggers are often so essential in teaching us things, right? So that whole pausing before we react, and when we do get triggered, and as parents, we're going to be triggered. As you know, in parenthood, we are going to get triggered, and your old wounds are going to resurface, and your ego needs to die over and over again through parenthood. Letting your triggers be your teacher, and just becoming the observer, detaching. We, like you said, we have like over 60,000 thoughts a day. Majority of them are not our own. We have picked them up along the lines. They're conditioned beliefs. I think for us, where we are in our lives too, like unlearning is just as important as learning, right? How many things do I have to unlearn and unbecome to truly become who I am and who I've always been meant to be? The masks that people wear and the conditioning that we take on. So, and as the cycle breakers for our children, supporting who they are in their authentic self, and, you know, realizing we're not raising little mini versions of ourselves, that they are here with their own spirit and soul that needs to thrive and be expressed. So that's also where full range of emotions and accepting those becomes really important as a mindful parent as well, because your children are going to be angry. And I think setting boundaries around how it's expressed is important, of course, but full range of emotions, you are safe, you are supported to express, is so huge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And children have an advantage as well with these practices, because they're naturally curious. They've got much less programming, as you mentioned as well, and things to unlearn, but that curiosity and that beginner's mind, they call it in Zen Buddhism, that is what kids are. And so, you know, they don't need a whole lot of exposure just to, you know, what a pocket of peace means to them to quickly catch that and build that into a way of being, you know, and it's so powerful. I think one of the biggest challenges that people have, and I'm just curious on how you approach this, is, you know, we talk about bringing the, you know, the observer online, trying to just relax the body, just be in the moment. Most people are just so tied up in their story, in autopilot, you know, completely like unconscious. There's no observer there. They're in the river flowing, and that's where they live. Now, how do people wake up from that to start to say, okay, I'm going to start to put a few mindful moments in? Is there something that you recommend? Because, you know, when we talk about kids, you know, we talk about parents, it's really monkey see, monkey do. So if we're demonstrating this, we can be a wonderful teacher, because they really end up doing more of what we do.
Yeah,
versus what
so
we say.
Exactly what you said, monkey see, monkey do. So for me, I a lot of times, if I share that I'm taking pockets of peace. So first, I will say that I start every morning with usually a 30-minute meditation and prayer. And I end my evenings also with a meditation. There's truly not a day that goes by that I don't. I make sure that I get up early enough before Gemma Love, when I do have her, and she sees me at nighttime do it. So being the example, right? But I'm so busy and I have my kids and I feel like everything is chaos and I can't make time. But they don't need to see you sitting there for 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Sometimes it's sitting there on the couch, placing one hand on your heart and one hand on your belly, and they see that you're just sitting there and you're breathing. And, you know, they can see that now you've regulated yourself, and maybe they're going to join you next time. So it's just, it's being the example. And I'd often even say to her, like, Mama's going to meditate now, because she does need to see that. She needs to see that I prioritize myself. I probably didn't do that a lot in the beginning. So I will say, like, honor the season you're in, right? But also, it is a choice. Like, I probably could have done it more when she was really little, and oftentimes maybe didn't, right? You're tired and like you said, you just pick up the phone or you have these things on autopilot that are happening, but it's a new choice. And so like Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about rewiring ourselves. So if every morning you're waking up and you pick up your phone and you just start scrolling, well, if tomorrow you decide to not, and you sit down and you meditate and you do that for a few days in a row, you are rewiring yourself. So I think it's having that devotion to self. This life, it flies by, and we need to take care of our soul. If you want to be a really good parent, you have to take care of yourself, right? So in order to take care of them, we have to take care of ourselves. And often, more times than not, we're putting ourselves on the back burner. Like you said, we're just on autopilot. We don't pick up these new habits, but they are. I don't want to call it a habit. For me, it's more like a ritual and a devotion. I'm very devoted to my practice because it is the only thing that truly got me through everything. So navigating the traumas, navigating a very long, and hard divorce. It was my breath, my prayer, and my meditation that got me through. So I don't just say take these sweet pockets of peace and do your meditation because it's good for you. Like, I know it. I've lived it. I've seen what it can do for you to regulate your nervous system. And and also you have to face your shadows, you know? Like, the mindful path is not all rainbows and unicorns. The more aware you become, the more aware you become. So then you see the darkness too, right? And you see all of this, these habits and everything you notice that is just corrupt. And all of the things start really sticking out to you. But that's a part of awakening. It's not for the faint of heart. When it comes to yourself, right?
No,
your sweet pockets of peace with your children are... Their medicine for the soul.
Yeah. Well, when that door opens, though, you can't close it, though. It's like, that's it. And just to your last point, I mean, it seems to almost get worse before it gets better initially, because you are starting to notice all your unsavory behaviors and patterns and things as you shine light into that. So going back to, how do people become more mindful? I love what you said about creating devotion and rituals. I think people having an intention around that is so important, to say, okay, I'm going to protect time and schedule it if you have to. I feel that people, because people's calendars that they live in there, for a lot of people, and if there's two working parents, to protect time for yourself. And, self-care can be like fill in the blank, but anything where you're just sitting undistracted, not on your phone, but like some, in nature, just doing some breathing or some stretching or, even exercise could be an opportunity for someone to just disconnect and become more mindful with that intention of that ritual. And I think that's important for the kids too. I picked up what you said earlier, and I agree 100% on, we can't force the kids into certain practices. We talked before this podcast, I was doing during COVID for my friend's platform City Shred. We were doing two mindfulness practices through the Instagram Live a week during COVID for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And eventually the kids, I'm like, sit down, you gotta do your thing, right? And it almost becomes a little bit too much. But I think it organically creating that space with the kids, whenever we can, because every moment is an opportunity. But I think it does definitely starts with the parent by having that intention. And again, I use rituals, but I don't use devotion, but I really like that word as well.
You have to be devoted to yourself, and you have to protect your peace. If there's one thing that has become so clear to me over these last, I'd say 4 years, it's been protect your peace at all costs, because it's so essential, and protect your children's peace. So important to protect their peace as well. And so when it comes to adults and how we talk about a lot of things like energy and vibration, and, so often we go to work and we come home and we're carrying the energy of the day, and maybe we feel like we have an energy hangover and we want to do these things to cleanse our energy. People are, but I feel like so often people are not acknowledging that your children have been at school all day and that they have picked up energy all day from teachers and other students. And when they come home, if they're dysregulated, we need to take care of their energy as well, right? And so we have a lot of not just Zen practices, like really fun practices. We'll do energy cleanses. And, you know, I have Gemma Love swipe all of her energy off and she'll turn it into a big ball of light and throw it back into the universe. And so she makes it fun, but she understands I'm carrying something that maybe does not belong to me. And that can make them dysregulated, right? So are they tired and dysregulated? And what environment were they in all day? Those things all matter. It doesn't just affect adults. It affects children. So yeah, have a dance party, shake it off, you know, throw some tunes on and dance in your kitchen while you're cooking. Like silliness is also mindful, right? And it's soothing to the soul. So I say like, don't be so rigid in your practice. Just enter it with intention and love. And when it comes to the affirmations, the reason why I'm so passionate about them for children is because so often we are attaching negative words, right? Following the words I am. How often do we say it? Yeah. Or you hear I am bored. Yeah. That's a negative thing maybe for a child, but it's not. You should let them be bored. That's when creativity is born. Yeah. But as women, you know, hard on our bodies, I am this, I am that, I'm not good enough. How often are we just attaching negative words to that? So if we can empower them, you know, with positive affirmations, that's going to be planted in their subconscious mind. And yeah.
So important. So important. You know, because thoughts are things, they're vibrations, they stack on top of each other. Yes. Negative or positive. I know that a lot of my own programming is through repeated I ams as a child, and that becomes a belief system. And it's a lot harder to, it's malleable, but it's harder to change a belief system than it is to catch yourself in the moment or be intentional, like you say, with those affirmations. I love what you said about playfulness and just like, you know, the flow of life and incorporating, you know, a number of different practices, especially with younger kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has to be fun. You know, my daughter's 12, just turned 12. She's okay just to sit down and do a practice now. My son likes Amazing. Breath work. You know, he's 10. Something that he was able to incorporate, you know, through the practice over the years to self-regulate when he gets really upset. If he doesn't remember right away, he just notices he starts to kick in his conscious breathing pattern and just levers the nervous system right down. You know, no words or anything else could do that, but the breath, as you mentioned earlier as well. I'm curious about your journey as an author as well. You've got this beautiful book here. A Journey Through Your Grateful Garden. I mean, something like this as well is a wonderful way to introduce, you know, mindfulness to kids. What was obviously your daughter was your inspiration partially, but to write this, I think it's a beautiful thing to
Thank
do.
Thank you. So my first book was The Affirmation Station, which I wrote when Gemma Love was 3 months old. So, oh my gosh, it has been out for a while now. And that was a book of affirmations followed by a little poem and a mantra. And then in the back, it's one of those books that you keep forever because it has a journal in it. So they would create their own affirmations and their own gratitude journal. And this one is really one of a series. I have multiple more written, but so this was when COVID was happening. So I'll just give a little backstory. I didn't do a huge launch with this book because it's all about breathing, right? Like connecting to your breath. And we were living in a time where they weren't letting kids anywhere without a mask and all the things. So yeah, it's nice that I can finally release it into the world. And my intention though, I will say with this book was you as the parent. So it's creating these pockets of peace. This is about a 3-minute read. And it's good for teachers, caregivers, parents. But for me, I was thinking parent-child connection. And your voice is their safe place. You know, you can be the meditation guide for your child. And that is so comforting to know that it's your voice leading them through this journey on their grateful garden. And then I put in the back of the book to ask them, what did they see? And it's going to be different every time. So what did you see in your grateful garden? And the creative things they come up with, different every time. But so not only are you cultivating connection and cultivating peace with them by being their meditation guide, now you're cultivating conversation and connection through conversation. And their imagination is everything, right? And so you get to see and get to actually experience while their eyes were closed, what did they see and what did they experience? And you'll laugh and you'll be touched. And it's just, yeah, I just wanted the parent and child to have, like you said, those sweet pockets of peace. And in this very distracted and loud world, what can do that? Well, you don't need to always put on an app or a YouTube guided meditation. You can be their guide. It's your voice, right? That's going to calm their nervous system and connect with them. I love it. I love knowing that parents and children are meditating together. It's just, yeah, because I know how special it's been for Gemma, Love, and I. And I see what it, you know, the positive effects that it has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. The voice, right? It is the safe place. And, you know, whether most people wouldn't maybe qualify themselves as a meditation teacher, but as reading something like this to your child is a meditation.
And it's going to heal your inner child too. I remember somebody said, so what age group is the book for? And I always had a hard time like picking that. I understand like maybe this wouldn't be, you know, for up to like 13 or 14. So I always say like 0 to 10, 0 to 12, but also it heals it's feeding your inner child at the same time, right? Anything we engage in with our children. So yeah.
Yeah. And that's mindfulness, you know, that's really just being present with your family, with your child. I mean, back to basics. And that's a little bit hard for people to slow down now because everything's moving so quickly and it's instant access to information and entertainment. And there's a million brilliant marketers are vying for our attention. I've been told by a lot of people and feel maybe there's spiritual wars. There's all kinds of things happening right now for our attention. And so just to stop, turn it all off, you know, read a book or just connect or breathe together, play, do these rituals and devotions. It's powerful stuff, you know, and I'm finding with men as well, it's just getting back to just being basic again, like the primal thing. Take your shoes off and go out in the forest for a few minutes and just notice what happens with your heart rate and your blood pressure and your thoughts. Everything starts to settle down.
Yeah, I love
in that space.
As like coming from the feminine, just what I'm witnessing right now happening with the masculine and just men diving in, doing the work, being present fathers, because your children, they need a father, right? And so they need that, but they need a present dad. And so men, there's a lot of pressure on men, right? They're out there, protectors, providers, they're doing all the things. So to be able to like shut it off and get on the ground, like you said, go out in the forest and nature, all of those things. But even when it comes time to be with your children and do this meditation, there's nothing more beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. I love that.
Next time I want to dive into what you mentioned too about the inner child. And interesting, as a parent, being a parent to your own inner child and creating a new relationship with that part of you, for a lot of people, or for some people who may not know what that means. I mean, for myself and my own journey, you know, connecting with my little Brian at certain ages of my life has been very powerful. I actually have a picture of myself at a certain age and one of the things I review every single day. And I just look at that little guy and I, you know, give him a big hug and some love and it's magic, but I would love to do it.
Yeah. I love that. When I was working with men in recovery and leading them through meditation, and I would always do one where we meet your future self. And then also where we go back and, you know, not just your inner child, like inner teenager, inner adolescent, like you can meet very, very different versions of yourself. The feedback I would get from them when they finally met themselves at the end of the field and the things that came up for them when they were willing to open up and share that with me was just so beautiful. And it is really important to sit there and think, like, what does little Brian need and how can I love him? And what, you know, what did he need? How can I give that to him now? And yeah, it's so healing and it's so beautiful.
So healing. Yeah. So Tanya, if anybody wants to connect with you or learn more about how they can, you know, adopt mindfulness more into their lives or their children's lives, you know, what are you working on? How can people find you?
Yeah. So right now I'm just mainly on Instagram. I am working on getting a website back and running, and I also work with adults too. So, but they can just connect with me on Instagram, and I'll be sharing more of what's to come. And if anybody wants to find the book, it's available on Indigo or Amazon, where books are sold, and some local bookshops also have them if you're local to where I live. And there is an Indigo in Toronto, I believe, that has it in store. But Tanya Joy Antonio.
Okay, beautiful. Tanya Joy Antonio. Yeah. Okay, perfect. I'll put all those links into the show notes as well. So, well, thank you so much. That was really great. I mean, I honestly wrote down a bunch of stuff, didn't really look at it because I knew we'd have a good conversation around this. So
thank you, truly, from the bottom of my heart. This was so beautiful. Love connecting.
Awesome.